Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Grammar and pet peeves go together like, well, perhaps my guest has the right simile for that. Joining us now to talk about your pet grammar peeves and share her insights on grammar is Mignon Fogarty. She created and hosts the Grammar Girl podcast and wrote the best-selling Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing, among many other books. Welcome back to the show, Mignon.
Hi, Anne. Thanks. Let's say they go together like milk and cookies.
Oh, that's good. I was like, all I could think of was hand and glove, and I was torturing myself. And I'm like, wait a minute. Mignon's going to be in the show. Good. All right. Got that all right. In your recent post about quotation marks, you said there are differences between use in American English and British English. And I'm thinking most people don't use quotation marks in the same spot anyway, in the right spot anyway. How did the quotation differences develop?
It's actually a fascinating story, one of my favorites. So it's because of the history of typesetting. So when you're actually laying out text using those little metal squares that have the letters on them, mm-hmm. the way they used to make books, the period is a very small square. And the story goes that you had to put the period inside a quotation mark to keep it from breaking off in the printing process.
Oh,
yeah, and so in Britain they used to do it that way too. And then at some point when the period didn't break off anymore, I don't know if they got stronger, they moved to, digital printing, but the Fowler brothers, who are well-known usage experts in England, started lobbying for the British people to use what they called a more logical quotation mark rule. And so they moved the period outside the closing quotation mark in England because they thought it was more logical. And in America, we just went, yeah, whatever, we're not doing it the British way. So we just kept it inside the closing quotation mark the way we had always been doing it. And so it really was, the history of typesetting and then a lobby for change in Britain that didn't make it over to the United States.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Mignon Fogarty, host of the Grammar Girl podcast and author of Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing. If you have a question or comment for Mignon Fogarty, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a pet peeve, now is the time to share it, and maybe Mignon can put it to rest or validate you, one or the other, or something else. What other differences? Does the history of typesetting explain any other differences between Americans and Brits in how they write?
That I can think of. One interesting history of printing, though, of letters, is that the letter I, it didn't always have a dot over it. That little dot over the letter I is called a tittle. And I think it was the 1400s when it started showing up in manuscripts. So when you look at very, very old manuscripts, they don't have a dot over the letter I.
Well, why, do we know why it changed?
Well, the way the script was written back then, it was hard to tell the letter M from the letter N with an I next to it. It looked very similar just the way the scripts were. And so They put the dot over the I so you could tell an N-I. You could tell the difference between an N-I and an M. Yeah.
Wow. French, we've talked about this before, but I always love to talk about the French and their efforts to preserve the purity of a language. And now they're going after ASAP? Seriously?
Yeah, the French, they crack me up. So they have, unlike English, the French, they have this ruling body that they give authority over the French language. It's called the French Academy, that's the English translation, and they call their members the Immortals, which just always cracks me up. But they say they don't call them the Immortals because they think the people on the committee are immortal. They're trying to protect the immortality of the French language. So they're trying to keep it pure, which means keeping out English words. It's the exact opposite of what we do in English. English has made itself what it is by taking in all these foreign words. I mean, many, many English words come from foreign languages. If you start looking, they're from French and Indian and, we incorporated words from every language that exists. And the French, instead, they're trying to keep it out. So they hated email. They don't want people in France to use the word email. They have some French alternative. And just a couple of weeks ago, they came out saying French people should not use the abbreviation ASAP. They just make these declarations every once in a while. And
does anybody pay attention?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure some people do, and probably the official government publications, you know, would follow these rules because it's sort of their ruling body. But, you know, trying to keep teenagers from using the word email in France is I think, a losing battle.
If you have a question about grammar, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Mignon Fogarty, host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Have there ever been, the French are into it now, but has anyone ever, or any country or any entity tried to control language in the past, like the Vatican? I don't know.
I don't know about the Vatican. There have been, you know, movements in the U.S. and in Britain to create governing bodies that will say how English should be used. You know, people will establish groups, and for the most part, everyone seems to ignore them. It's just, I don't think it's in our nature, especially not as Americans. I just don't think it's in our nature to let someone tell us how we can use our own language.
But you hear from people all the time with pet peeves and people who criticize your answers a lot of times, right?
Right. And I was going to say, on the flip side, pet peeve, peeve is a really old word, but the phrase pet peeve originated in America. So, you know, we don't want anyone to tell us how to use our language, but we also, I think we like to complain.
How did the pet peeve originate?
It just showed up in, I think it was 1917, in a newspaper in Indiana, just talking about people and their pet peeves. It just showed up. But that phrase is originated in America.
What are the biggest changes that we're seeing occur in English in this generation?
Well, if you look at online writing, BuzzFeed just came out with a style guide, for example, and it covered a lot of the things that a traditional style guide wouldn't cover. So I remember seeing in a write-up of it that they specified how you should write ha, ha, ha online. So according to the BuzzFeed style guide, if I'm remembering correctly, it should be H-A, H-A, H-A,
with all lowercase. With no
spaces.
Ha, ha, ha. Oh, wow, how weird.
So there are all these new things that we have to talk about and write about and describe. So I guess going back, I mean, we don't have one governing authority that tells us how to use language, but we do have these books called style guides that say, if you're writing for this publication, here's how we want you to do it. Because consistency is important when you're writing a magazine or a website. You want your writers to all be doing it the same way so that it's a consistent experience for your readers. So, you know, we have books, and the people who work for publications agree to submit to these rules.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about the extent of governing bodies that we have.
Yeah, like the association magazines, professional publications,
right,
for psychology or sociology or something like that. They all file.
Right.
It's actually maddening if you've ever edited any of that stuff.
Right. So the American Medical Association,
right,
will have different rules from the Chicago Manual of Style, which will be different from the AP style book.
Yep. So much. 614-292-8513. Get your questions in. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do young people seem to be any more among the peeved, or are they just letting it all hang out? They don't really care much. Do the peeved among us tend to be older, or do they include youngers?
I think that people who are annoyed by things tend to be older, and I don't think that's just true today. I think that's always been true.
Okay.
Because you've lived longer, and change is the thing that's annoying. So, you know, if, for example, a long, long time ago, it used to be correct to say Billy was graduated from Stanford, right? And then it moved to Billy graduated from Stanford instead of was graduated from.
Mm-hmm.
So if you lived 70 years ago, you're used to the was graduated from form, and when the new way sounds weird to you and it will annoy you. But if you were born 30 years ago, Billy graduated from high school is the way you grew up saying it, so it's not going to annoy you. And then if you, you know, maybe were born 20 years ago, maybe you say Billy graduated high school, and then that's going to annoy both those older groups. So it's I think it's really change that tends to annoy people. And so the older you are, the more change you've seen.
Okay. Connie in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Connie.
Hi. My question is about the use of, I guess it's possessive. Our pastor says the words of Jesus, and she says Jesus's. And it seems to me that's way too many sisses.
You mean when she's saying Jesus's words?
Yeah, the words
okay.
of Jesus.
All uh-huh. right. What about word names that end in S? How do you do that, Mignon Fogarty?
Well, so it's interesting. Jesus is actually an exception to the standard rule. So it's actually, for most words, it's a style choice. So you could say Charles, you could write Charles with just an apostrophe at the end, or you could write Charles's, Charles's apostrophe S. They're both correct. It's just a style choice. But I believe most styles say that for Jesus and Moses and a couple other names like that, you just use the apostrophe. You never use the apostrophe S at the end. And it's fun. I'm always coming up with memory tricks to help me remember things. And the way I remember that one, I'm like, oh, Jesus got ripped off. They left. They even took away his final S.
Okay.
<You know? laughs>
Okay.
That's how I remember.
Connie in Westerville, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and my interview with Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty continues in just a moment. But first, here's morning news anchor Steve Brown and reporter Mandy Trimble to tell you more about Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the do's and don'ts or maybes of grammar. Still with us is Mignon Fogarty, creator and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. Mignon, I'm going to go straight to a call right now from Jim in Columbus. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. You have possibly an explanation for the origins of peeves.
Well, not exactly an explanation. Now, I'm sure Mignon is not old enough, and maybe, Ann, you're not old enough, but right after
the war,
there was a radio program called The Great Gildersleeve, starring Willard Waterman, and he had a neighbor named Mr. Peavy, and I'll bet that's where they got this word, because this guy was always upset about something, point one. Point two, I'm peeved about graduated high school, and of course, I don't know what we're going to do about that. Point three, I had to look up a possessive for Moses, and when you do that, it says the only two exceptions to the apostrophe S is Moses and Jesus.
Oh, so Moses is in that category. All right.
Yeah, I looked it up because I was writing a paper on that, and I said, that doesn't look right. And I went online to Wikipedia, and it said the only exceptions they knew of were Moses and Jesus. So, and finally, about our friends, the French. Mark Twain said, it's illegal, it's immoral, it's unethical. Sputter, sputter, it's French.
Okay. Jim, thanks a lot.
You bet. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's great.
Just for the record, everybody, I have never heard of Gildersleeve before. In fact, I had to ask my screener about that. Just saying. There we go. You know what, Mignon? You have decided to try something different to teach grammar, and you're playing off the idea of the pet peeve. Tell us about your new venture.
Thank you. Well, I'm making a card game called Peeve Wars, where you have little monster peeves on playing cards, and you use them to build an army of peeves to annoy your opponent to death. It's just, I've been playing it with handmade cards. It's just a blast, and I'm doing a crowdfunding project to actually make it real. So you can find that at fundanything.com/peevewars.
Uh-huh.
And I've always imagined that these peeves, people call in and they say, this bugs me and that bugs
right.
me. And I hate it when people say, ain't so, and a lot is one word. And I just imagine they're little monsters that are running around your house, you know, annoying you in every way they can. And so we're trying to bring the peeves to life. And, you know, in the game, the cards, their power matches their their name. So the a lot card lets you hold more cards in your hand. You can hold a lot of cards. And the can't hardly wait card, that's a double negative,
yeah.
that lets you interrupt your player's turn. You can't hardly wait, so you play in the middle of their turn. And the ain't so card lets you negate the power of one of their cards. So, you know, they try to play a can't hardly wait, and you say, ain't so, and block them. And it's we've been having so much fun. I just can't wait to get this game made.
All right. I like it. It sounds like a lot of fun. And some pet peeves are worse than others. Sometimes people will call in with their pet peeve, and you go, well, yeah, actually, that isn't that big of a deal.
Right. And so, you know, sometimes my pet peeve, it annoys me when people use while to mean although. You know, I think while has a sense of time. You know, I gathered wood while you found the matches for the fire.
Uh-huh.
But when you look it up, there's no basis for my peeve. And so I sympathize with people when I have to tell them, yeah, you know, your peeve, there's actually no real basis for that. But, you know, for some reason we latch onto certain things and they will annoy us whether we're right or not.
Okay, let's see. Chris at OSU on campus, I guess. Hi, Chris,
yeah.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, well, I have so many pet peeves, but okay. I was calling regarding a grammatical thing, mm-hmm. Punctuation, I should say. When you have a list, a series in a sentence, let's say bridges, towers, buildings, and hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Comma, comma, no comma, and hotels. I don't like, mm-hmm. I want the comma before the and.
So that comma is called a serial comma or an Oxford comma, and whether or not you use it is a style choice. So the Chicago Manual of Style says to always put that comma there, and the AP Style Guide says to always leave it out
right.
unless it's essential for clarity. So and what I found is many people were taught one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
and they grow through life believing it's a rule instead of a style, and they'll see it and they say, oh, they're doing it wrong over there. But it's actually just a matter of styles. And, you know, I like the comma. I prefer it. I use it in my writing. But it's not wrong to leave it out, especially if you're following AP style.
Just between two newspapers that I you know, when I went from one newspaper to the other, they used a different style for that. So it it's irritating when you grow up or when you're used to using something one way and then you have to change it. It's an odd feeling. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Mignon Fogarty, host of the Grammar Girl podcast. If you have a question or comment, we're always ready, willing, and able to listen to pet peeves about grammar, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Bob. Has the rule changed for when there is and when there are should be used? If I were to estimate, I would say 90% of the time they are used incorrectly. Listen to the news. Listen to All Sides. Often there are is used correctly, but not there is. There is many ways to do a task. There is lots of times that one errs. I would say that both of these should use there are. Has the rule changed?
No, the rule hasn't changed. It's I think the reason people aren't saying there is many ways, when you hear them, they'll say there's many ways.
Yes.
And it's because one, we're used to hearing it, but two, there are is a very hard thing to say. There are many ways. Like all those R's kind of get bunched up in your mouth. It's an awkward thing to say. There are many ways. And I think when people are speaking quickly, they tend to go toward the easier thing to say. I think it's a subconscious thing. I think if people realized they were saying mm-hmm. there is firefighters on the scene, they would know it's wrong. But it's that tendency to contract it to theirs that trips people up.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
The rule itself hasn't changed.
I can't imagine saying there is many ways to do a task, but I can't imagine myself saying there's many ways to do a task. When you put it that way, Mignon. So
right.
It's possible that All Sides makes that error once in a while. On the other hand, this writer likes to put their period outside their quotation marks, so they're a little bit of a rebel, too. Email from Robert in Canton. He writes, question mark and exclamation point, inside or outside the quote mark? What about colons and semicolons and commas? You wouldn't I'm not sure what they mean by colons, semicolons, and commas.
I know what they mean.
Okay,
so,
good. All right.
So this goes back to the typesetting thing we talked about earlier. And so it's only periods and commas that go inside the closing quotation mark in the United States, because they're the little ones that were in danger of breaking off. The question mark, the exclamation point, the colons and the semicolons, they weren't in danger of breaking off when they were outside in the typesetting world, and so they always went on the outside. So there are two ways I remember this. First, it's those little ones that are in danger of breaking off that go on the inside. And then to remember that rule, I think inside the U.S., inside the quotation marks. So everything except the period and the comma go outside the closing quotation mark.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. We'll take one quick call. Joan, can you be quick? Hi, Joan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, so I have a stationery store, and we have often used Mignon as a great reference, and we thank her for that. One of our pet peeves is the use of social titles. My understanding is that you don't separate a man from his last name. So, for example, Mr. and Mrs. Bob Smith. And where we run into issues is convincing people that you would not say Bob and Mary Smith, but you would say Mary and Bob Smith. So I want to make sure that's correct, that it goes ladies first, Mary and Bob Smith. Is that correct?
Excuse me. No, I've never seen that addressed anywhere. I don't know the rule. What you're saying sounds logical to me, but I don't know the rule, and I can't remember ever seeing it addressed anywhere. It seems like more of a manners,
yeah, an
thing
etiquette
than a
type of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's considered etiquette,
you know,
versus grammar.
Yeah, I would check Emily Post or something on that.
Okay, great, good answer. Yeah. And that's, we consult Emily Post as well, so we will continue doing so. So thank you very much, and we love your book, and we love your information. Thanks again.
Thank you,
Joan.
Sorry I couldn't be more help on that one.
That's good. That's fine. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Heather commented on Twitter that, can't wait to tell my husband he uses quotation marks the British way. It has been a point of disagreement between us for years. Go, Heather.
Well, in the game, one of the peeves cards is gone missing. It lets you steal your opponent's cards. But it's actually, the little tag on the card says, it's not actually wrong, it's just British.
Here, a quick, Steve in Eastland, is that Columbus?
Yes.
Okay, Steve in Columbus, you're on the air, welcome.
Fine. One of my pet peeves is what I view as an increasingly frequent use of myself when you should be saying me. I've even noticed the president say it that way. And is,
yes,
there some kind of a trend where myself is replacing me?
Okay.
It's a very, very common error. Mm-hmm. You know, people will say, send the memo to myself instead of send the memo to me. It is. It's just, it should be me. It's the object pronoun. Myself is the reflexive pronoun. It's just, that's not how you use it. But so it should be send the memo to me. You know, call Bob and me, not Bob and myself. It's a very common error. I don't know that it's, I'm not sure whether it's more common than it used to be, but it is very common now, especially in business,
yeah,
and situations where people are, I think people think it sounds more formal, and I don't know why, but I think that's why they use it.
Okay. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the do's and don'ts of grammar with grammar girl Mignon Fogarty. More of this conversation in just a moment. But first, reporter Mandy Trimble and morning news anchor Steve Brown have an update on Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. What's your grammar peeve? Do you have a bet with somebody? Joining us today to make all clear in the world of grammar is Mignon Fogarty. She's an author and creator and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You can also email us at allsides at WOSU.org. We have an email from Lisa. She says, pet peeve, colon, the car needs washed instead of the car needs to be washed. So we've talked about that before. The car needs washed, my house needs painted, that sort of thing.
Right. It's a regional thing, and I believe it's specific to the Ohio area. And what's really interesting is, you know, it's usually people who move to the area who notice the difference, and it drives them crazy and they'll complain about it. I've met many people who've grown up in that area and don't even know it's wrong. I even met a copy editor once who thought it was right to say, you know, the car needs washed. So it's very, very common in that region of the U.S. It's, you know, we have all these great regionalisms, and they sound funny to people from different areas. You know, you have roundabouts versus traffic circles and subways versus hoagies, and you say y'all in the South, but you guys up in Seattle. And yeah, it's a needs washed is a very strong regionalism.
Which you've probably figured out after all the years of being on the show.
Right, yes.
No one else complains about it until you're on an Ohio show. So let's see. Christine in Circleville, you're on the air. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is preventive better or preventative? I prefer preventive.
Yes, so this is an interesting one, too. So neither is wrong. Often when there are two words that mean the same thing, people will think one is wrong, and they often think the longer one is the one that's wrong. So preventive is the preferred term. It's the term most people are going to like better. It's the one, you know, you'll see more often. But preventative actually isn't wrong. It's a real word, and you'll find it in the dictionary. And I believe it's used in certain professions. I think maybe you see it a lot in medicine, you know, preventative care. I know
Google
book searches, I see it, more in technical medical books and things like that. So it's not wrong, but the shorter one, preventive, is sort of better, more preferred.
Christine, thanks for that call. Email from Leslie. What about two spaces after the period? Is that a style thing in typing? Do you need two spaces? That was just a big issue recently.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. People argue about this. I know Slate had a really snarky article about it. I have an article on my website that talks more about the history. Typically, when people were taught to type on a typewriter, they were taught to put two spaces after a period. And now the style has changed, now that we have proportional fonts in a typewriter font, the I is the same width as the W. But with modern computer fonts, the I is much more narrow than the W. So it just changes the way the letters and punctuation are spaced on the page. And there's that is R thing again.
Yeah.
So the standard rule today is to put one space after a period, but it is a style choice, and there are some, you know, professors, publishers who will still want two spaces, but I would say probably 90% of the publications out there now at least use one space after a period.
Okay, and David in Mount Gilead, David wants to comment about that gender notation etiquette. Hi, David.
Hello, Anne. Love the show. Mignon, love it when you're on with Anne. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so the question was about the etiquette with the Mr. and Mrs. Bob Smith. When these rules were established, etiquette, as harsh as it sounds, probably wasn't an established importance at the time. So I believe that the proper way to do it would be Mr. and Mrs. Bob Smith. And if you did not want to use Mr. and Mrs. and wanted to use Mary and Bob, then Mary, I believe, would come before Bob, because you don't want to separate Bob from his last name. That's just my opinion, and a little bit of research has told me the same. So I'll take my comment off the air, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, it makes logical sense that you would keep Bob and his first name and his last name together. It would just look better. You know, English isn't always logical, but, you know, in the absence of any other information, logic is a good way to go.
All right. Helen, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Helen from Columbus.
Hi.
Hi.
My My peeve is functionality. Why do we need the word functionality when function seems to operate in exactly the same way?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of like preventive and preventative. I suspect functionality isn't wrong either. I would have to look it up to be sure. But yeah, function just sounds a lot better. You know, in it's almost always better to use the shorter word. I was reading a book review this morning, and I just cracked up because it said, I love this book. It held my attention until the denouement. And I'm like, nobody outside of fiction writers is even going to know what denouement means. Why didn't you just say it held my attention until the end? You know, so often when people are trying, when they're writing for the public, when they're speaking, it's the same reason people use myself. They're choosing longer words with more syllables, then they think they sound more important. But really, the shorter words usually communicate what you mean better.
We have an email from Carl who writes, which is correct, if I were him or if I were he?
If I were, this is like it is I versus it is me. So when you're answering, for example, when you're answering the telephone, should you say, is Bob there? This is he or this is him? And it's one of those things where there's an answer that's technically right. You should say, this is he, is the traditional right way to say it, just because of the way the sentence is constructed. But most people will say, this is him, or this is me. They'll use the object pronoun. It just sounds more natural. It's what people tend to say. And even grammar experts will say, gosh, you sound awfully stuffy and formal if you answer the phone, that is I, instead of that is me. So I think it's the same thing. You should say, if I were, I believe, have to think about it, if I were he is probably grammatically correct, but I bet it sounds more natural for people to say if I were him.
Okay,
because
I know.
Because were is a linking verb, that's why.
It'll keep you up at night.
It will.
Rose writes on Facebook, I need some helpful hints to remember the correct usage of lay, lie, laying, laid, etc. I always screw that up.
Yeah, you know, I have a chart on my website. If you Google Grammar Girl lay versus lie, you'll find a chart. And even I have to refer to that chart sometimes. It's hard for some reason to remember. And I think part of it is because a lot of us were taught the childhood prayer, now I lay me down to sleep. And that is just an archaic construction that doesn't reflect how we normally use those words. So in a way, we learned it backwards because we learned that prayer. So the way you think of, I remember, the basic rule at least, is that it's a cynical memory tip, but think people lie. You know, people will tell lies, people lie. You also lie on the sofa. So when people do that, they lie. And then remember, like, hens lay eggs. Most people can remember that. Hens lay eggs. And that when you have an object and you're laying it down, you use lay. So hens lay eggs. I lay the book on the table, but I lie on the sofa and the cat lies on the floor.
Ha ha. If you have a cat that lies on the floor, I'd like to meet him. I am turning to Brian in Worthington now. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. This isn't really a peeve. I'm not really peeved about it. But anyhow, a couple times ago, you're on, and you talked about the word decimate that was based on, you know, that's being misused to basically talk about something that, you know, destroying something rather than decimation, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That made me think of another one that I've been noticing is a podium, that people, you know, a podium being a platform, and it's root, you know, obviously has something to do with the feet. But anyhow, it seems like people use the word podium now for anything like a lectern, a rostrum, or whatever. You could have somebody talking about their lecture standing behind the podium when he's actually, you know, behind a lectern, or, you know, President Obama, you know, giving the speech from the Congress at the podium, you're standing behind the podium when he's actually in a rostrum, I would imagine. And so it's kind of makes the grammar convoluted, because I think someone from, like, maybe even 10 years ago would be really confused by all of it. And then we're kind of losing those words that have specific meanings for something that's really general.
I think it's interesting. Well, you mentioned that the pod part comes from the feet, and that will help me remember. Mignon?
Right, that's exactly how I remember. So podium has the same root as podiatrist, you know, foot doctor. So when I hear podium, that triggers in my mind feet. So you stand on a podium, you stand, your feet are on the podium. It's sort of the platform. And the lectern is the thing you stand behind. It's and it's very commonly confused. I think most people, maybe not most, but I think a lot of people don't know the difference. But remember, podium is for your feet.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that. And Dan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I've been wondering about the use of the word so. It seems to be cropping up like from many years ago. For example, in spoken language, I'm noticing a lot when, say, on an NPR news program, if a field reporter is talking with the host of the program and the host asks a question, the reporter begins the answer with the word so, which is unnecessary, but you seem to hear it. It seems to be cropping up a lot, and I'm wondering about that.
Right. I've read some articles that theorize that so is pedantic. It's a way of saying, so, you know, I know more than you do. I disagree with that theory, partly because I do it. I say so at the beginning of an answer, and I'm not doing it because I think I'm smarter than everyone else. For me, it's a way of buying time and gathering my thoughts. I just did it. So it's a transition word. It's a lot like and like. They're filler words, and we use them to buy ourselves time or let ourselves think. We actually have a card in the game Peeve Wars. It's called the filler word card, and it has no power and no function. It doesn't do anything at all. It just takes up space. So it's funny. And you play you get points for certain different kinds of cards you have in play. So it can give you points in some way, but it's very powerless compared to the other cards. Just like filler words in speech are very powerless, but they have certain functions that aren't immediately obvious.
Mignon Fogarty, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always fun to be on your show.
Mignon Fogarty, she's host of the Grammar Girl podcast, author of the Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing, among many others. And also, if you want to check out her new game that's in the works, you can go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks to Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty again. And joining us now, our morning news anchor, Steve Brown, and reporter Mandy Trimble with the latest on Match Day on 89.7 NPR.